WHYY is proudly supported by Penn Medicine. From groundbreaking discoveries to life-saving care, Penn Medicine's innovation is helping to change lives, one moment, one treatment, one patient at a time.
This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. My guest, Jeffrey Rothfader, used his home computer to get personal data on Dan Quayle, Dan Rather, and Arsenio Hall. Rothfader got the information by tapping into computerized credit data banks. My guest is not a computer criminal. He's an investigative reporter and a former editor at Businessweek. His new book, Privacy for Sale, warns how easy it is to get access to private information about you and me stored in the huge databanks of credit bureaus. The credit bureaus have information supplied by banks, insurance companies, department stores, collection agencies, credit unions, doctors, courthouses, and motor vehicle agencies. The safeguards of privacy have not caught up with the computer age. I asked Rothfader why, as part of his research, he tapped into the credit bureau files on Dan Quayle.
I believe strongly, as an investigative reporter in sort of advocacy journalism, to the extent where you go in and show people how it can be done in order to prove to them that it can be done. And I decided to take a test case, and I chose Dan Quayle mainly because I didn't want to be frivolous. I didn't want to pick a celebrity like Liz Taylor or something like that. I felt that wasn't serious enough. So I picked Dan Quayle and decided to see if I could access his credit report. I mean, after all, he's also the vice president, and I figured if I could access his credit report, then nobody's was safe from being protected.
So where did you start?
Well, I had heard, as I started looking at the business, I learned about what I call the information underground, which are not the big information resellers like TRW, Equifax, TransUnion, you know, and all the direct marketers, but it's sort of this underground level that subscribes to the bigger ones and then resells it. And they're a lot less careful about who they sell it to. And I had been told that there's this niche that exists, and I began to, you know, talking from one source to the next, started to get some names of some of these companies, and I started calling them up. I found out that I call these companies super bureaus because they essentially collect information from a lot of others and put them together. So they're, in a sense, bigger than the big ones they hook into, at least in breadth of what they provide. And so I called up one of the super bureaus and said now, to get a credit report, let me back up one second. To get a credit report in the United States, you have to have what is called a permissible business purpose. It's really poorly defined. It could be anything. It could be I'm selling you a lawnmower and I'm going to pay you out for 2 months and or you're going to pay me out for 2 months, and so I want to check on your credit report. It also could be I felt a journalistic exercise. That's permissible business purpose. So I called up the Super Bureau. I told them I was from McGraw-Hill, which owns Business Week, and that I was thinking of hiring some people. And I just simply said that. I said that and I wanted to run some background checks on it. They sent me the application. I filled it out, making mistakes on the application on purpose, meaning they asked for a federal ID number. I didn't know McGraw-Hill's federal ID number, so I made one up. At another part of the application, they asked for it again. I made up a different one. They asked for bank account information from McGraw-Hill. Of course, I didn't have that. I said, that's not available. So I basically made it easy to be caught because I wanted to see if this, where the levels of protection stood. I really bungled my way into this. And they made it impossible to be caught because they accepted my application. They said they wanted to check me a little bit further, and they came to the McGraw-Hill building, which is a skyscraper in New York, looked at the building, which says McGraw-Hill on it, and said, well, that's legit. They basically were just checking on the legitimacy of the McGraw-Hill company. After that, they gave me a password, and I was able to go online into the system and access anybody's credit report, which, of course, includes the Social Security number and their jobs, their backgrounds, their salaries, their judgments, and so on.
So you mean once you get the go-ahead from one of these super bureaus, you can get anybody's information?
Oh, yeah. There's no questions asked at that point. Once you're online, you're online. And with Dan Quayle, I didn't have, and interestingly, you don't need a Social Security number or anything to get the report. You just need an address, a name and an address. With Quayle, I didn't have his address. So I looked up an old who's who. It was about a 10-year-old who's who, found an old address for him in Indiana, typed in Dan Quayle, typed in his address in Indiana, and then immediately the computer responded, a.k.a. J. Danforth Quayle, his current address, and just printed out the credit report. I was afraid that, still I was afraid that the next day or so I'd get caught, you know, that somebody would call me and say, what are you doing? Nobody did. I was able to do it. I could have kept on looking up anybody's credit report, except that I published it in Business Week, and they shut me down. They shut my password down at that point. Since then, I've opened up new passwords at other companies. I subsequently, for the book, for Privacy for Sale, I've gotten a lot more information on individuals by going into a lot deeper databases. If you'd like, I'd go into the Dan Rather experiment.
Sure. Now, you chose Dan Rather as a subject because he has a reputation for being very private and having gone to extremes to protect his private information.
Yeah. You know, Dan Rather is obviously a target of some weird people from time to time, and he's also a target of the right wing, which considers him far too liberal. And so he has taken care to protect it. And also, he's not the kind of celebrity that hangs out at bars and parties that much. So some of the ways he's protected it, for instance, is he's actually told the information industry or people, companies he deals with, that his information must be protected or he'll sue. And that in a way is enough because here's a man with obviously a salary of $3-5 million, whatever, a year, and so he's got the resources to do something like that, and a big enough name. However, I didn't find it that much more difficult to get information about Rather. I tapped into and when I use tap, I don't mean by hacking. I simply got access to a super bureau that sells much more than credit reports, that sells not only credit reports, but Social Security information, bank account balance information, telephone records, credit card bills themselves, so you can see where people have shopped, and those kinds of things. And you know, virtually through this kind of super bureau, there's almost nothing you can buy coming up with the right amount of money and the right request.
So how much money did you spend buying information on Rather?
Well, Rather, because I limited it to a few, just a few pieces of information, I only ended up spending about $300 on it. I accessed a credit report of his first because I didn't have any information about him, as obviously like his Social Security number and all that. So I used the credit report effectively to get the Social Security number and his current address, as well as any credit information that I wanted to see. And then I accessed a credit card bill based on the credit card he uses the most, which I took out of his credit report. I looked at which one he had high activity on, got a bill for a one-month period, at which time I could see, you know, where he shopped, what kind of money he spent, and you know, where he ate, and so on.
So your point here, I think, is that if you could get information on Dan Quayle and Dan Rather, mm-hmm. then anyone could get information on you and me.
Yeah, which occurs all the time, unfortunately, and more and more. And as I said, with non-celebrities, when I've been experimenting, I've had no trouble getting any kinds of information with no questions asked. I mean, even the phone bills and so on. It was a lot easier.
These super bureaus that you've been tapping into to buy information mm-hmm. on people, are they legal?
Yeah, you know, one of the problems is there are virtually no privacy laws in the United States. Almost all kinds of information, from medical records to bank account records, telephone records, credit card bills, are not protected by any privacy laws. Credit reports are protected by the Fair Credit Reporting Act. However, as I said to you before, what that law says is that anyone with and that's the quote, permissible business purpose can access a credit report. And so it's virtually being, that loophole is being used by anybody who wants to get in. I mean, again, my permissible business purposes was I was doing a journalistic exercise. That stretched it as far as some people in the credit industry felt, but there was nothing they could do to stop me. And so the super bureaus are basically acting openly and legally in their actions.
Now, how do they get the information? Who do they get it from?
Well, they subscribe, depending on the information you're talking about, but if you take, obviously, the credit reports, they subscribe to the big three credit bureaus, and they simply resell that data. Other kinds of information, like phone records, bank account balances, you know, medical records and things like that, are accessible by, basically, it has to be people who are working at those organizations, meaning if I'm going to get Dan Rather's telephone records, then somebody at New York Telephone is leaking that information out. And that is, as I said, about anybody, not difficult to do. But part of the problem is it's being leaked out probably by a clerk who's sitting at a desk who's making $15,000 a year who doesn't mind collecting another $500 or maybe $200 or whatever to leak out a phone bill. The problem is that person will never get caught, and that's why it's so easy to do, because virtually no companies have audit trails. Virtually no companies can figure out who accessed what yesterday. That just isn't part of most computer systems. So it makes it easy to leak it out, and it makes it easy for some of these people to make some extra money doing that. Then once it gets onto the Super Bureau trail, you know, into their network, that's how it gets delivered to people like me.
My guest is journalist Jeffrey Rothfader. He's the author of the new book, Privacy for Sale. More after this short break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Jeffrey Rothfader, author of the new book, Privacy for Sale, How Computerization Has Made Everyone's Private Life an Open Secret. Okay, so you've explained something about how these super bureaus work. There's also kind of like computer billboards that have a lot of information on people. Would you explain how those are, what those are and how they work?
Yeah, there are quite a few. Obviously, quite a few online networks these days, like CompuServe and Nexus, and there are probably a half a dozen others that virtually exist to sell information. Now, generally, they are online networks that sell, you know, research information like back issues of articles in magazines and so on. But increasingly, they are providing more personal information of what is considered to be a public nature. Meaning, for instance, on CompuServe, there is something called a phone file, in which by just typing in someone's name and state or general location, you can access everyone else with that name and their addresses and their phone numbers and the family demographics, even meaning, you know, how many people are in the family. In the book, I happened to just be playing around with it one day. Some people have looked up Madonna in it and found it, for instance, in other experiments. I happened to be playing around with it. I typed in Dylan, thinking I might find Bob Dylan. I didn't find him, but I found Sarah Dylan, his wife, who has been virtually reclusive from the press and the media and everyone else ever since their divorce many years ago. So, and there I had her address and her phone number. And in fact, I spoke to Bob Dylan's biographer and checked it out with him. And he said, you know, it's amazing. I couldn't even talk to her. And you got that easily on CompuServe. Nexus, on the other hand, sells real estate records, which again are public information, mortgage information and all that. You can go down to the local town hall of the county, let's say, where someone lives, or the town where someone lives, and find out what their house is like, what their mortgage is like, the value of the property, and so on. That's old-fashioned, though, because you'd have to go to that town, travel there, and so on. Nexus is selling it online for much of the country, meaning that they've got most of this real estate information now computerized. And you see, I think that's a key point here, too, is that, you know, the way things used to be, even within public information like driver's license records, which are public information, as I said, real estate records and tax information and so on, it used to be much more difficult to get because you'd have to go somewhere physically, sign a piece of paper saying, this is what I want. You have to get through a clerk and they'll be on record that you access this information. Now that it's computerized, you can essentially be a voyeur very silently, very quietly, sitting at your computer at home, and no one will ever ask you why you did it. And the person that you looked up won't even know that you ever did.
What are the controls supposed to be on these computer networks?
Well, none really. That's part of the problem. I mean, there are no real controls. As I said, no laws. And also, within most companies, they have not paid the price to build in controls that would enable someone to check who looked up what yesterday and why, or even be able to ask someone at the point of entry. I mean, for instance, when you're getting a credit report, maybe the smallest of diligence would say that when I type in Dan Quayle and it comes back, a.k.a. J. Danforth Quayle, maybe it should have asked me the question, do you have a permissible business purpose to get this credit report, yes or no? If I had typed yes, in a sense, I'm going a little bit further with this ruse, and maybe I'm sort of committing some kind of perjury or something like that. I don't know how I'd feel about it, but at least that much. At least they'd have that on record. nobody asked that question at all. And in none of these networks do they ever ask why you want this or to prove for any reason that, that you have a right to have it.
Well, I think most people would agree they don't want other people to get their phone number. But what about their medical records? Did you find medical records are being made available in this way?
Yeah, although the reason for accessing it is different, so it's somewhat of a different scenario. There is a place called the Medical Information Bureau that's up in Cambridge, in Boston, that collects medical records about most of us. Collects doctor records, hospital records, and records from insurers. This is a consortium of the nation's insurance companies. And basically, the reason for the Medical Information Bureau is to stop fraud. I mean, this way, when you fill out an insurance application and you say that you don't smoke, MIB probably knows if you smoke because you've probably either told your doctor, a hospital might know about it, or you told an insurer about it before. And once you've told them, it'll get onto this MIB file. That kind of data is very important to insurers. And insurers will say it keeps their costs down and keeps the cost down to the consumer and so on. Unfortunately, because data like that is now centralized in a data bank, it now becomes much more available to people who want to get at it. Now, you know, in most cases, it's not going to be the hacker type that's going to break into MIB, but it's going to be people that now have access to that kind of information and will use it in one way or another. For instance, employers can get MIB information. Usually you've signed that when you get a job, you sign that they can continue to do background checks on you. Most people sign that boilerplate statement, meaning 5 years after you have that job, an employer might check with MIB because you're acting a little strange and wondering, well, you know, I wonder, has he been going to AA lately or anything like that? Well, they can check that and find that out. Insurers obviously can get that information, even if you're not going for insurance with them. And there have been cases where some insurers, people who work in insurance companies, have actually gossiped about one guy, one particular man I know, it's a very horrible story, up in upstate New York, small town, local businessman. He has AIDS. It got onto the MIB network. This insurer happened to be checking around about some of his clients and all and other people's clients to do business with them, saw this listing that this man had AIDS at a local Rotary Club luncheon one day. He went and gossiped it to other people there. By the next day, the entire town knew about it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, if it wasn't for MIB, that kind of information wouldn't be available.
What would you recommend that individuals do to safeguard information about themselves?
Well, it's very, very difficult, frankly. What people have to do, for instance, is get your credit report once or twice a year. This way you can look to see if anybody, first of all, on the credit report, it'll say who has accessed it. It won't say individuals. Like in the case when I accessed Dan Quayle's credit report, it listed, so on Dan Quayle's credit report would go a listing of the Super Bureau, meaning because that's basically the accessor of
right.
it. You know what I mean? So, but still, Dan Quayle, if he had looked at his credit report and let's say I hadn't published this information, he could have then said, well, who's this? And why did they look at my credit report? So it does list the names of places. So that can at least put you on your toes a little bit. Also, obviously, if there's any hint, become more vigilant about knowing how this business works. Because if there is any hint of any kind of scam going on in your life, if it sounds like someone knows your phone numbers or things like that, you know, then you've got to take the step by, let's say, calling the phone company and saying, you leaked out some information about me, I know you have, and I'm going to take action. Now, I'm not sure there really is any action to take. But, you know, you should say, I'm going to take action unless you start closing the loops on these things. And maybe that will slow it down a little bit. The other thing I was going to say is, you know, deal with Congress. I mean, there are constantly laws introduced, and maybe if Congress felt that consumers were getting that upset, they might do something about it.
How do you get your credit report?
Well, all three of, the two main credit bureaus, TRW and Equifax, they have an 800 numbers that you can get through the 800 number listing that you just simply call up. And you can request a copy of your credit report, you know, by giving certain background information like where you've lived, your date of birth, mother's maiden name, that kind of stuff. And TRW will give you one free credit report each year. Equifax charges you about $8 for your credit report.
Are you afraid that your book is going to be used as a how-to book for people who want to access people's private information that they really should not be accessing?
Yeah, I am, and that always disturbs me in general about this. You know, every time I've done anything about the subject. The calls and the letters that I get, even at home, I mean, people try to track me down, and they're so proud when they found my home number. It's listed in the phone book, actually, to tell you the truth. I always hear from people who want to find somebody or want to access information on somebody, or, you know, somebody's run off with their kids. I mean, a marital dispute and things like that. And a lot of times they're legitimate, tragic stories. And people want to use this system to do that. And, you know, they always ask me how, and I never tell them because I don't know what kind of harm's going to follow from it. I mean, I am afraid that people will use it to, let's say, find somebody and then commit some kind of harm against them or something like that if they get mad enough. That's a problem. Unfortunately, we are all very gossipy about each other. I think what the thing is that we prize our own privacy but not that of others. I think that's a very big problem in this country. And so, you know, most people will ask me, for instance, what did you find on Dan Quayle's credit report? What did you find about Dan Rather? I mean, people want to know that kind of stuff. And so on purpose, I didn't put a how-to in the book. I mean, I showed how I did it, but I didn't give names and addresses and phone numbers of the kinds of companies to access to do it. If people go ahead and do it on their own, there's nothing I can do about that. But I am concerned about that.
Well, Jeffrey Rothfader, I want to thank you very much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Jeffrey Rothfader is a reporter, former information management editor at Businessweek. His new book is called Privacy for Sale: How Computerization Has Made Everyone's Private Life an Open Secret. I'm Terry Gross, and this is Fresh Air.